The resource meeting is in session. Joining us today are Representative Olson, Representative Gatto, Representative Crawford, Representative Elkins, Co-Chair Samuels, myself, Representative Ledoux is in the hallway, and Representative Kapsner are both walking in. We are without everyone but Representative Seaton. Today we are going to, the only thing on our agenda is HB 153, which is the NPDES bill. We're going to take public testimony, then some committee discussion, and then hopefully try and vote this out today. Can we go to Bob Robichaud? He's just here to answer questions. And then we do have Cameron Leonard. He's with the AG's office. He's here to answer questions. As I speak, I guess. I think the only person we have, Representative Seaton, has just joined us. So I think we have Brian Kraft with the Bristol Bay Alliance in Anchorage. Are you with us, Mr. Kraft?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, sir.
I appreciate this opportunity to come in and speak before the committee. This House bill here worries. There are some problems with it that I find worrisome. I own a fishing lodge out in Bristol Bay, on the Quijack River, and then also have started this nonprofit organization called the Bristol Bay Alliance to help educate local people in the communities of the lake and Bristol Bay area about issues such as this that might adversely affect their ways of life, their native cultural ways of life. One of the things that strikes me right off on this, and I'm no attorney or anything like that, I'm just an average citizen here, Alaskan, 17 years. It worries me that there's going to be, it looks like, from what I can see, less people to help enforce permitting requirements and actual inspections of facilities if industries were permitted under this that could adversely affect habitat or waterways, salmon-bearing streams. I would think that the state of Alaska, us as citizens here, having spent so much time and effort and financial resources in promoting wild, fresh Alaskan salmon, would be doing just the opposite. We'd be looking for more enforcement and more people staffing to ensure that not only our salmon-bearing streams, but the habitat that surrounds those streams is protected, and that the people that depend so heavily on them for subsistence are also protected, their subsistence way of life, which seems to be in the area of Alaska that I live in western Alaska, a very big concern on a lot of issues that are on the table in the Bristol Bay area and the Lake Giliamna area. One of the other things that I find with this is that that this would make for more of a bigger state government. I don't know why we are looking at it when we have the federal government that is willing to endure the cost of operating it and overseeing it, the permitting and enforcement of those permits. One of the things that I think that we as in the state should be looking at is looking at ways to streamline our state government and things that we do. Seems like we're working hand in hand with EPA right now on some of the issues, and I think that that seems to be working just fine. One of the last things I have here. I'm trying to be brief for you folks. Is that I, as a citizen here, just a normal citizen, looking on the face value of this, find it very troublesome that the permit writer, the company, industry, or the permit person, the person applying for permit, is working so closely with the person, and sometimes even being contracted by him, by our state agencies, to do preliminary work on the permit. It almost seems like the fox is in charge of the hen house there. All the people that work for the state actually are working for the administration, and if the administration is leaning one way or the other, either maybe pro-development or anti-development, it seems like we have an awful big influence as to the decisions that this new department would be undertaking. So it seems like it would be best served, us as Alaskans would be best served, that if the federal government kept this, kept on doing what they are doing here through the EPA, and that we worked closely with them and maybe had a joint committee or something like that that worked hand in hand with them. Hope I was clear, and I do appreciate the opportunity to speak here. It's the first time, and I do appreciate it. If anybody has questions, I'd like to answer them if I could.
Hey, that's my part, Mr. Kraft, is to ask you if anybody has any questions. Would you mind stating your name for the record?
Sure. My name is Brian Kraft, K-R-A-F-T.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Kraft on his testimony? Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kraft, it seems to me, whether it's at the federal level or at the state level, either one runs the risk of being politicized as to which administration and what their leanings are, that they're going to bring that to the table. And it would just seem to me that if that's the case, then wouldn't it be better to have the regulators closer to the scene of where the application is, rather than having somebody at the federal level?
Well, I'm just going to take, for example, this current administration that we have and answer it, sir, the best that I can. And again, I am no expert in this field. I'm an average citizen giving you my opinion on things. And I look at this administration right now as pro-development, roads to resources platform. So if, for instance, a mining company wants to develop an area out in the Iliamna area or develop a potential mining district in the Iliamna area, and the people that are in charge of permitting it work for the governor that is pushing for that, then they're going to be more likely to maybe be less lenient, less stringent on that permitting process. I think when it's at the state level, it's much easier to be influenced by your local governor, especially in a small state as us. I mean, everybody seems to know everybody in this state pretty much. I've known your name for many years, and it just seems like it would be much better served that if there was at the federal level, even if we had a pro-development, in this example I'm giving, a pro-development president, as we do here, on the federal level, it seems like they're maybe a little bit further away from the influences and the pressure of their local governor who wants to get things, wants to have development.
Thank you, Mr. Kraft. I have another question from you from Chairman Samuels.
Yeah. Hi, Brian. This is Ralph Samuels. And I had a comment. Sometimes in the regulatory environment, it could cut both ways. And you and I have talked about your concerns with the mine around Iliamna, but it could cut also that you want a permit for the lodge. And if you get frustrated with the process, speaking for somebody whose industry has dealt is regulated entirely by Washington, D.C., I would pray I would have somebody in Juneau or Anchorage I could go yell at about things. Instead, I have to go to Washington. And if you just wanted, I mean, the very simple thing, and to have to wait 2 years for a permit for you're expanding your lodge, and I don't even know what you would need permits for from DEC, but there's a likelihood that, you know, you want to do something with your dishwater. And to deal with Washington, D.C. on a simple thing and wait 2 years, it could cut both ways that you'd want to cut through it also. So that is something to bear in mind here. I don't think the bill in any way, shape, or form is trying to pick a side, development or not development, but the way I looked at it is who can you get your hands on? And I'm looking at the two guys right now in the front row of the committee room here. When you have a problem, because to deal with somebody in Washington is about to be the most frustrating thing in the whole world.
Yeah, and Ralph, how are you doing? It's nice to talk to you. I do deal with it quite a bit, and one thing, and I have looked at this bill. I'm not extremely educated on it. I've seen it on the surface. I've looked at it and read it, and I try and make the most of it that I can. But one thing that I do know, looking at this and not being looking at it from a lodge operation or even worried about the mines proposal, looking at it as we're going to go down from, you know, maybe what, 40-some-odd staff with the EPA here in Alaska, we're going to cut that down by this bill, and so there's less staff. I just look at it, I worry about it as less staff, less enforcement, and then also a cost to you and me and everybody else that lives in the state. We're going to be bearing the cost of this program now.
Very good. Are there any other questions for Mr. Kraft? We want to thank you for your very articulate testimony, sir. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Do we have anybody else? Fairbanks, I have Mr. Leonard from the Attorney General's office, but he is here to answer any questions. I also have Bob Robichaud to answer any questions. Anybody in the room that would like to testify? Yes? No? Just questions? Okay, seeing that, we're going to close public testimony. I'd like to keep Mr. Robichaud with the EPA and Mr. Leonard on the line as we go into committee discussion. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wanting to follow up on Representative Samuel's question a moment ago about having to go to EPA, and I was wondering if we could get either the EPA or the department to expound on that, because I was under the impression that on small permits that's done by DEC and not through EPA at the current time, and I'd just like to clarify that for me.
Excellent. Who would like to address that for us? Would that be you, Mr. Easton?
I'd be happy.
Please do. Come forward and state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Easton, Director of Water for DEC. I do think that in the case of, it is true that in the very small permits, the state is the most prevalent permit issuing authority. Kind of the dividing line currently between EPA and DEC is that EPA does the vast majority of the permits, but DEC does the smaller ones. So your understanding, Representative Seaton, is correct.
Representative Ledoux, you had a question?
Yes, I do. I understand that in the current system, there is a relationship between tribal governments and EPA. How will this work if the state assumes primacy? Will the state continue to work with those unincorporated communities in which the tribal governments run things such as clean water, sanitation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, it's a little complex, but I think your question is sort of getting at the special relationship that EPA has with tribal government. It doesn't really have to do with unincorporated or otherwise forms of municipal government, but EPA has a obligation for government-to-government consultation with tribal governments. That obligation is not passed on to the state when primacy is assumed by the state in its sort of formal obligatory form as it applies to EPA. Instead, now here's the more complex part, is instead when the state applies to EPA for primacy, EPA has to consult with the tribal governments on that application. And what we expect to happen is that when EPA consults with the tribes on our application for primacy, that the tribes will say, we're concerned about loss of this government-to-government status that we enjoy as long as EPA is the permitting authority, and that we want you, EPA, to make a condition of approving state primacy that the state will consult with the tribes. So that's our expectation, that we won't, that we will have a less formal but nonetheless an obligation as condition of primacy approval to consult with tribal government. Was that too long, too complex to...
Representative Ledoux, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I'm not quite sure I understand it. I mean, right now we have a number of communities in many districts, such as mine, where there are not municipal governments. And so the entity which runs the community is generally speaking a tribal government. And the tribal governments deal with things that any government would. I mean, if, for example, if they're putting in a water tank or something like that, and they need a permit for that, what would happen under this new primacy system? Would you deal with these tribal governments then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, we would. We would permit a tribal owner, operator, permittee, just as we would permit any other permittee.
Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah. On that same point, I'd just like to expand a little bit. Basically, there's a sovereign-to-sovereign relationship between EPA, the federal government, and the tribes. And if the EPA is going to require, as a condition of getting primacy, that the state recognize or maintains a sovereign-to-sovereign relationship, that is, the state would then have to take a position of recognizing sovereignty of tribal entities in the state. Do we have a legal opinion from... that outlines that and outlines the sovereign entities that we have recognized or not recognized, but through this process would be required to recognize?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, this is a issue we discussed with our attorneys present with EPA at length during the work group process. The obligation to the state is not sovereign recognition. It's an obligation of consultation. So what the state would be required to do is to consult with tribes before taking actions that could have a significant impact on tribes. It will have no bearing on, you know, the sovereign or otherwise status of tribal governments in Alaska.
Follow up, please. So then you're saying that the EPA would deal with, would say that the state needs to recognize and deal with the tribe in the same relationship that it would deal with any group of citizens that lived in an area, that there would be a consultation there? Or is there some different level of consultation that would be with tribes versus a group of citizens that live in an area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, our obligation is for public notice and comment. Consultation is not, and it is a special form of obligation. So with everybody else, we'll be bound in our public notice and requirement standard, but with tribes, we would expect that they would get consultation status. In other words, notified, offered an opportunity to meet with and discuss with the department.
Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who makes that call, whether a tribe is being affected or not? You make that call, or do they make the call, or is it mutually agreed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford, that's a question I'm not sure of the answer on. I would invite or suggest that Bob Robichaux with EPA or perhaps Cam Leonard might be able to answer that, but I'm afraid I can't. We could get back to you.
Would you like to propose that question, Mr. Crawford, to either of those gentlemen?
That would be just fine.
Okay. Who do you want to go to, the EPA or the AG's office?
Either one that can answer it.
Bob or Mr. Leonard, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. This is Cam Leonard.
Can you address Representative Crawford's concern, please?
I can try. Again, Representative Crawford, through the chair, I know that as it works currently, with EPA issuing the permit and being subject to that obligation to do the government-to-government consultation, EPA itself decides what tribes are likely to be affected by any given decision. It defines the universe of tribes, and sometimes in the past, the state hasn't always agreed with EPA's decision in that regard. I don't know, however, how it would work under the state program, because I think the details of whatever condition EPA may place on its approval of our program haven't really been discussed to that level of detail. So I only know how it works now. I don't know how it would work under the state's regime.
Thank you.
Is that satisfactory?
Probably the best answer I'm going to get, but right. I don't know if that's satisfactory.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bob Robichaux. If you'd like me to expound on that, I can.
Would you please?
I'll just kind of relate to you how we do business on the government-to-government consultation, you know, in terms of determining tribal interest in a particular project that we're working on in terms of preparing a permit. Essentially, as Mr. Leonard indicated, Cam Leonard indicated, we identify tribes that might be impacted by a permit that we're intending on issuing. What we do in terms of our process, we go ahead and notify the tribes of our interest in developing a permit for a particular entity. And what we'll do in that case is invite them to chat with us or meet with us to talk about their concerns. We'll discuss with them the project at length with them. But normally before a permit is public notice, our procedure is to notify the tribes, affected tribes, and they will in turn notify us if they have an interest. If they have an interest, we do sit down with them, we'll call them on the phone, have a fair amount of dialogue with them. Now, once the permit is drafted and public notice, not only do the citizens and permittees have an opportunity to comment on the permit, but the tribe can take that opportunity also to comment on the permit. Before we finalize the permit and issue it, we will, if the tribe requires formal consultation, where a chairperson for the tribe expects to meet with our regional administrator, we will set that up and have discussions on the permit that we're ready to issue. Before we issue the permit, though, we do have another opportunity to talk to the tribes, affected tribes, to let them know what our intent is in terms of finalizing the permit and issuing it to them. So there's at least two steps in the process. Before the public notice, we do meet with the tribes if they're interested, and just before the permit is issued, we give them an opportunity to meet with us again for them to talk with us about the permit that we're ready to issue them. And in the case of Alaska, they would just simply have a DEC. They would have to develop some procedures, and again, as Mr. Leonard indicated, the state proceeded with moving ahead with an application, they would develop those procedures and work with us on those procedures.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Robichaux. Is that a more thorough answer? Excellent. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Seaton?
Were you talking on that point?
No, we're ready to okay. Proceed to the next point.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I did have an opportunity to talk with DEC earlier, and one of the concerns I expressed to them was on page 2, lines 3 and 4, about maintaining a work group representatives of affected permittees and the EPA. And my expression to them, and I think that they were going to prepare some language maybe, about expanding that work group beyond the permittees so that we actually had the public involved. And I don't know if they haven't, then.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, we actually didn't prepare anything. We understand your comment and our discussion to be one of that. The bill says that the permittee will have access to the permit after the close of the public comment period, where we have said on the record that that's what the bill says, actually our intent. In fact, the only thing that we could do is that we couldn't give the permittee exclusive access to the permit at that point in time, and that would be our intent, that the permit would be made available after the public comment period closes to the permittee. It would be posted on the web and would be made available to anybody that provided comment on the draft permit. We do think that that's a legitimate and good point, but at this point we hadn't prepared an amendment or
follow up. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that happened to be another point I wanted to talk about, but at this point was on page 2, lines 3 and 4, about maintaining a working group that is exclusively with permittees and the EPA. And so that was the lines 3 and 4.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, I skipped topics. I guess I'm sorry. We believe that the work group consisting of the permittees, but meetings that were open to the public, worked very well. We understand that you'll see a lot of work groups where there are public representatives on the group. If that's something that either this committee or others would want to change, such that there, in addition to the permittees, there would be one or two, whatever, some number of public members, kind of public at large, and that I suspect would be fine with us.
Follow up, Representative Seaton?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just offer a conceptual amendment to, yes.
I need to move the bill first.
I'll do that at the other time.
Okay. Any other committee discussion before we, thank you, Mr. Reese. Does anybody want to move HB 153?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move that we're still on the original version with no, we don't need to adopt it. We have it before us.
Thank you for clarifying things for the press. I appreciate that. Mr. Samuels, thank you. Representative Seaton?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, then I'd offer an amendment, conceptual amendment. I guess that'd be number 1 on page 2, line 3. That would insert after permittees, comma, the public, and then on line 4, after meet, insert the words in a public forum. Notice under rules of AS 44.62.
Okay. Any objections to amendment number 1?
I'll object. I'd like to know from the DEC folks, when you get together with a work group, I'm assuming that that's noticed anyway? The amendment says to have it as a noticed meeting, which I don't tend to have any problems with, but I just want to know what do you do now when you're meeting with the EPA and the affected permittees?
Mr. Chairman.
Is it a noticed meeting with a certain time?
The meetings were noticed. The schedule of the meetings was published in the paper and on the.
And it happens now, so I don't have a problem with that. So, and the other part, I'd just like to make a point, and then I'll remove my objections. I don't have any problem at all with public members that are concerned. I mean, if you have Brian Kraft or somebody who wants to have a seat at the table, I would have a lot of problem with, you have a work group this size, and we've got the Sierra Club and the Audubon Society and the Trustees for Alaska and, because that's not what we're after. And I want to clarify that on the record, that we don't want millions of dollars of outside money coming in with a vested interest in simply stopping development. That is the sole goal in mind. It's to stop development. That's not what you mean by this, I'm assuming. Because if so, then I will maintain my objection. Member of the public, if Brian Kraft wants to see the table, or the lodge owners or people that want to see this transition go smoothly or not see it at all, that's fine. But we have groups that use the process to subvert any. Their sole goal is to stop getting the permits, to slow down the regulatory process, and they use this as a tactic, which I don't agree with them on. So I just want on the record what the goal of the amendment is.
Representative Seaton?
Yes, and the goal of them is to broaden so that there are some members of the public. Currently, the work group that met had no members representing the public or anyone else. It was strictly permittees, and I think that we as a legislative body establishing in statute a work group that is going to work on these permits needs to make sure that the Alaskan public is included also, and I have not at all specified any membership. That would be up to DEC to establish in their work group, and I presume that they would be working with Alaskans that are concerned about these issues and that have been participating in the work group but just have not had a membership in the work group that established these to date, but they could be anybody that DEC would want to do. So I'm not specifying anyone particular, and I would not want to say that the public members would be the majority of a work group or anything else, just that there should be someone representing the public interest as well as the individual permittees interest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The flip side of that, to make sure my comments are rounded out, is we also don't want DEC to have an affected permittee and then a mine or an oil company who doesn't happen to be affected that day as the member. I mean, if we are a public member, then we need a public member, but stay away from the gamesmanship. And with that, I'll remove my objection to Amendment 1.
Any other objections to Amendment 1? Seeing none, Amendment 1 passes. Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other thing that I'd like to discuss is on page 5, line 12 through 14. And this is the section that DEC actually addressed a few minutes ago. And my problem here is that, and I don't quite know how to cure it, but this says a person who applies for a permit under the program has the opportunity to review a proposed final permit and to discuss it with the staff of the department before the department issues the permit. And I think this is very problematic. You have a public process, you go through, you get a draft permit, and now the permittee has the right to go in and discuss with the staff, not in a public forum, and not in a way that even establishes that the rest of the public can participate, and they have stated here that that's not their intent. But this allows this negotiation and could give a lot of pressure from, depending upon who permittee is, upon the staff members of while they're generating the permit. And like I say, DEC has indicated this is not their intent to have a basically closed public meeting or closed meetings and have the permittee discuss the draft with the staff. But that's what this says, and I don't know how to fix it at this point. But maybe somebody else or DEC has a suggestion for it.
Come forward, wise one.
Mr. Chairman, I have, was just jotting down a potential fix. It would be obviously not thoroughly thought through, but on page 5, line 12, inserting after the word program, such that number 3 here would read, a person who applies for a permit under the program or comments, this is the addition, or comments on a draft permit, has the opportunity to review a proposed final permit and so on and so forth. That would open the process up to those that commented on the draft, which has been our intent all along.
Thank you, Mr. Easton. Representative Seaton, would you care to offer that as a conceptual amendment number 2?
I'd like to clarify some other wording here.
Please.
On line 13, and where it's the person has the and to discuss it with staff of the department, is that something that you are wanting to leave in? Because that basically says that they can have private communication with the staff or private negotiations with the staff after a draft permit is issued. The normal things that I'm familiar with is if a draft comes out, people can submit comments. But they have, you know, it's not been in my experience that anyone, whether it's a permittee or somebody else, has the statutory ability to discuss it privately with staff, and that's what this appears to allow.
Representative Seaton, if I could weigh in on this, because I work with DEC under a different extension, which is in the food service area, and I have many times gone in prior to a final permit being offered and discussed with them changes, modifications to a kitchen design, or things to make a facility more user-friendly without forcing DEC to come out in a formal capacity. So I have lived under number 3 here and have found it to be a very positive. One of the best features of DEC is that they are an approachable body and have been helpful to the permittee. Granted, it wasn't under NEPDES, it was under whatever other jurisdiction. I worked with DEC, and Representative Elkins, you probably could speak to this also in your experience.
Mine's similar to yours.
Sorry, Representative Elkins, go ahead.
Well, mine's similar to yours.
So in my case, I would tell you that item 3 here is one of the best features of DEC, is I found them to be a very accessible state agency that is been helpful and has accelerated the process, you know, in my dealings with them. but I'm delighted to accommodate you in any way, Representative Seaton.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my problem is basically this isn't applying for a kitchen permit or something that is only affecting you. This is talking about permits for discharges of can be environmental pollutants, it can be whatever that affects the general public. And so I think that the two categories of permits are quite different. And so I guess maybe we should break it into two amendments, and I would offer the language that DEC offered as the first amendment.
Okay, as a conceptual amendment number 2?
Conceptual amendment number 2.
How would it read?
And it would read, a person who applies for a permit under the program or comments on a draft permit. Has the draft permit, okay, has the opportunity, etc.
Okay.
Sure. Is this conceptual? Because there is subsection 2 and 3, and they're both have fairly similar language, although one has a final permit, one has a draft permit. That's the differences between the two. Are you intending to address both those in the same way?
Actually, through the chair,
please.
I consider them different things. Somebody applying for a permit originally might need to talk to DEC about the application. It hasn't gone out for public review. It hasn't, you know, they're not, they haven't formed any regulatory thing, and I think that that's an appropriate place for a give and take in designing. The section three here is after there's been public comment, after the agency has come forward and says these are going to be the requirements on this permit, and then it could allow individual negotiations with the permittee changing those conditions that have been generated by the agency based upon public comment. And that is a very unusual situation.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. In the real world, sometimes the permittee knows far more about the problems that DEC is trying to fix or trying to regulate than DEC or any of us would possibly know. So if I go in, and whether it be, I think the kitchen example is apropos. I don't think it's far off base. If you want a, you know, the lodge owner who has to get a permit to drill another well, or a mining company or anything else, sometimes they can tell DEC this is not getting you where you want to go, because the DEC doesn't run a lodge or a mine. So you want to be able to fix some of the problems. You don't want to change the general gist. You don't want somebody coming in there and gutting it. But you don't want to have a notice 3-day meeting when you just wanted to walk in and go, this is where we wanted to go, and have whichever person was applying for the permit say you're going to miss the mark because of X, and this was interpreted differently the last time 10 years ago when you guys weren't here, and I got turned down. This is why, and that's why you phrased it wrong. You need to change that phrase. I see what your problem is, but you don't want to take away some of the common sense that would be able to go where, if I'm applying for the permit, I can go talk to these two guys right here and go, you're not getting where you want to go. And I know this because I have applied for 100 permits before you guys had jobs here, and I'm going to apply for 100 more after you guys are gone.
Representative Seaton?
Yeah, and that's Representative Samuels. That's why in answer to Representative Gatta's question, I was saying that in the development of a permit, I am not amending that at the development of the permit. But after you go out for public comment, after the agency takes and makes draft regulations, what this does, this particular amendment we've got before us, allows either the permittee or someone else that has commented to propose or to send in additional comments on the draft regulation before the that's a review or a comment on a final permit.
Okay. Representative Samuels,
if you want to jump on in, Mr. Chairman, go feel free. But
well, what I'd really thank you. What I'd really like to do is I think we're all in agreement on a conceptual amendment number two, and I think what you're addressing is a comment that you have on amendment number three, which you haven't proposed yet. We didn't deviate from protocol. There hasn't been an objection to amendment number two. Are there any objections to conceptual amendment number two, which says, or comments on a draft permit? There's no objections to that. Then amendment number two passes. And then what I'd like to have you do, Representative Seaton, is propose amendment number three, which I will object to.
That's fine. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would proposed conceptual amendment number three, and that would be on lines 13, remove or delete the comma and the words "and to discuss it with staff of the department."
Okay, and I will object to amendment number three. Any additional discussion on that, Representative Seaton?
Yes, and again, this does allow the person to comment to the department to make clarifications. They submit them in writing just like you always do on those kind of things, but it doesn't become a negotiation, which I'm afraid that to discuss it with the staff of the department means they're going into negotiation, and that's why I am opposed to this, because this would be outside of the public arena on draft regulations. And draft regulations should be commented in in writing, and the department did that.
Arguably, Representative Seaton, so should close caucuses, but that's where we get a lot of our work done. So I'm going to oppose a conceptual amendment number 3. Representative Samuels?
Yeah, thank you. I have a question for DEC again. After the final rule comes out, what's the appeal process to it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuels, in the state process, there's an opportunity for an informal appeal to the director. Subsequent to that, there's an opportunity for adjudicatory appeal to the commissioner, and then subsequent to that, judicial appeal to the state superior court, the state court system. So,
if I could continue then. Please. So would it be fair to say then that if from the draft and a permittee went in, managed to talk one of your staff into gutting the entire thing and changing it, that there's obviously an appellate process and a paper trail saying what happened here. I can't see that being a problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Samuels, your understanding is correct.
Okay. And also, I'd like to make one other comment on what the original rule of a regulatory agency says that it should be first and foremost in all of our minds. The FERC rule that just came out from a regulatory body, and they're all the same as far as I'm concerned. Nothing. Personally, you can take as a compliment if you'd like.
Careful.
The FERC original rule that came out was 180 degrees and 10,000 miles from where we ended up. And if we had to work off of that working draft model and not been able to interact with the staff, we don't know where we would have ended up, because we, as well as the other industry players that were all at the table during this process. You could work with the staff. You could do a lot of things that there were more common sense, that were not policy issues. And I see DEC having the same.
Thank you, Representative Crawford.
I'm confused, Mr. Chairman, about the chronology here. I believe what Representative Samuels is talking about with the FERC rule was they came out with a draft, and then there was time for public comment and working with it, and we were able to change that. What Representative Seaton is talking about, I believe, is you come out with a draft and you have the public comment, then that's done, and then the permittee has a chance to go in and change it from there without the public comment. If I'm not seeing this right, then clue me in.
Representative Ledoux, you had a question.
I'm just trying to make sure that I'm following these two conceptual amendments. Number 3 right now, with Representative Seaton's second amendment, simply adds, under a person who applies for a permit under the program or as who has commented on a permit. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and then what we're discussing now is you want to take out the phrase and to discuss it with the staff of the department. But we're in the same section 3.
On final permit.
Okay. Thanks.
Representative Seaton.
And that's just what I'd like to clarify, is that I think what Representative Samuels is talking about is under Section 2, which I didn't modify, and that's where you come out with a draft permit. You have draft regulations. You work through those. You make all these things. But what Section 3 is that's taken place, and now they've taken all those comments. They've drawn up a final permit to issue, and this gives the people the opportunity to go in there after the public process, after those rules have been done, and tweak it at the end. And that's the only change that I'm making. I'm not proposing applying this to Section 2.
Well, speaking on behalf of Representative Ramirez, I still like the way Section 3 reads without conceptual amendment number 3. It is so useful, and restaurants in this case is quite similar to a pollution discharge, because it does serve the broad amount of the general public, and some of the most constructive time that I have had with DEC has been one-on-one meetings with health inspectors to clarify and clean up things upon a final permit. I found it to be efficient, a time saver, and a money saver, both for the department and for me in the private sector as a permittee. And I haven't found that it circumvents the public process. I've found that it has enhanced my ability as a member of the private sector to have a responsive relationship with a government agency and do one of the things that we are going to address in an amendment I'm going to propose, which is to expedite the process. So I'm going to maintain that. I'm going to ask that we try to wind up discussion on Amendment 3. I kind of think we all know where we're at. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Could we ask the department whether this is currently allowed for a permittee to come in and discuss the final rule before the issuance of that final rule, after the draft process, after public comments, to come in and do that on permits at the present time?
Did you get that, Mr. Easton? No helping, Ben. He can phone a friend if he wants.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, I could take a stab at that. I think that Cam Leonard might be a better person to answer that question.
Okay, you're going to choose to phone a friend?
This is Ben's recommendation.
Mr. Leonard, are you with us, please?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
I believe that question is from Representative Seaton through the chair. EPA currently does not allow that consultation with the applicant at the post-public notice stage, and I believe EPA interprets their own regulations as prohibiting that kind of consultation, although my review of their regulations convinces me there's still room for interpretation of how their regulations would work. And Mr. Robichaud can certainly speak better than myself about EPA's position, but in my experience, they have not allowed that. There's nothing under state law that would prohibit this kind of consultation between the applicant and DEC staff after public notice, the way state law reads now.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Robichaud, would you like to comment on that for us, please?
Yes, I can. Mr. Leonard is correct. Once the permit has gone through a public process, there's been a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, we do not have consultation with the permittee or any party for that matter after the public comment period and we're ready to issue the permit. I do want to offer up another comment. If the state proceeded with having discussions with the permittee or with other outside parties prior to the permit being issued after the public comment period, there's a provision in our regulations which the state would have to adopt as part of primacy that indicates that if there are significant changes from the draft permit to the preliminary final and the changes resulted in perhaps because of consultation, if you will, with the applicant or outside parties, there would be a requirement to re-notice that permit. So if there are significant, and there's a question about defining what significant is, the state would have to go back out and re-notice the permit and take comments on any significant changes they made to the permit before it actually gets issued.
Thank you, Mr. Robichaud. Mr. Easton and Ben Brown are nodding their head. Representative Seaton, any closing comments on conceptual amendment number 3?
No, thank you.
Okay. I'm going to maintain my objection to amendment number 3. Will you call the roll, please?
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Vada?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Representative Kapsner?
Yes.
No.
No.
It's 6 nays, 3 yays.
Okay. conceptual amendment number three fails. Any other amendments from the committee? Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think it's an amendment. On line 15, 16, and 17, it says the department shall develop in regulations a process for using contractors to assist it in the development of the permit to be issued by the department.
You're on page 5, is that right, Representative?
Yes. Okay. The section right after what we've just been dealing with. And I just wanted somebody to explain to me about using the contractors. Do we do that now? Is this something new, or just fill me in a little bit about?
I'm going to invite Mr. Easton up to discuss that, but I think it's a little bit what Representative Samuels was saying, which is often the permittee understands the project better than DEC, and so it's so far as defining the scope of what they want to do. Mr. Easton, would you like to comment on that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Crawford, that's correct. The other part to this is that this is a work group recommendation. It stems from a desire to make sure that the department has sufficient resources to deal with complex permits, to get permits out on time. And one way the work group saw to make sure that the department would have access to actually do the work was to make sure it had access to contractors. And this is just assurance that the department will use contractors to supplement our staff to get the work done.
Excuse me for a second. Will you take the gavel?
Certainly. I have the same question. When you say contractors, you're not talking about the permittees. You're just talking about staffing out some of your work.
That's correct.
With the lawyer or a...
Right. We would hire a consulting firm. Or...
Okay. Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's what I was getting at, too. I was wondering if that was the way we were getting by with less employees than what the EPA has now, that we were going to privatize some of this and give it to subcontractors rather than having regular employees do it.
That's true in part, I don't want to leave you with the impression that the way that we can run the program with 8 fewer employees is solely because we've privatized some of the work and given it to contractors. I mean, that there's probably some of it. Yeah, right. There's probably some of the reason is that we intend to use contractors though.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Easton, isn't EPA doing the same thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Olson, the EPA does. They make good use of contractors, and we would follow suit.
Representative Seaton?
Yes, does the fiscal note for this contain the contract, the amount of the expected contract?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seaton, it does.
Okay, so Representative Crawford, there is no amendment?
No.
Very good. Coacher Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a printout of Amendment 4, and I would move Amendment number 4, the conceptual Amendment number 4.
I'll object to Amendment number 4 for the purpose of discussion.
Where is it? Thank you. It's not marked as Amendment number 4. It says conceptual amendment to HB 153 House Resources. Are you out here?
Got it.
Go ahead.
My biggest concern with the bill, and I think the chairman and I agree on this, and I'd float this out there idea. My problem with the bill has been that if the time savings aren't actually found, and we're not going from whatever that it is now to our 18-month cutoff time, then we haven't really done a whole heck of a lot. If we have to go through another hoop, and if we're still haven't saved the time that we saved when they claim, that we haven't done anything. And what we'd like the department to do is to make sure that they tell us how many went over the 18-month time frame, how the transition is going, and if you look at four under the numbered issue, why something took more than 18 months, and to have some bit of a hammer in here, as that there'll be some consequences, that if the time savings that you're claiming you're going to get right now from the department, if the time savings do not happen and we're not streamlining the process, we want to know why, and we can revisit the entire issue. So that's kind of the gist of the whole amendment. The chairman can probably explain some of the details of it.
One moment, Representative Ledoux. Ben, this is a friendly amendment. The department, D.C., has no trouble with this amendment. Is that correct? Okay. Representative Ledoux.
I guess something that strikes me about this is that we may be, what's that expression, closing the barn door after the horses have already left the barn? I mean, if we find out after we've already enacted this that it isn't saving any time, then we've managed to spend some money and go through a whole bunch of hoops, and I'm not sure what we've gotten out of that then.
Okay. Representative Ledoux, I'm going to ask Ben to come up and answer that, but I'll remind you that all but five states have taken over primacy of from EPA, so I think we're in that process, and we tried to address time and money in here, which is how much time does it take to get a permit, and how much more or less will a permit cost to do this. Ben, would you like to address?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Benjamin Brown, Legislative Liaison for the Department of Environmental Conservation. All exercises in prognostication are imperfect. I mean, we're never going to know how fast the metaphorical horses to which you refer are going to run once the doors open. Sometimes they'll just trot out very slowly. And we've really done our very best in conjunction with this work group here to prepare a piece of legislation that begins a process towards assumption of primacy. What's good about this amendment, I submit to you, is that it's not just a report once assumption has taken place and permits are being issued. It's a report from, you know, that will follow the application process through. So you and the legislature will have an opportunity as we fill out the application, as we adopt the regulations, as we submit it to the EPA, as the EPA conducts its public hearing process. Anything looks a little fishy to you out there, that's all we can do through this amendment is to provide you with information and to show you that we are making this progress that we have stated that we're going to try to make. I can't give you 100% certainty, but I can tell you that we're happy to try to provide the information to you so that you have as much capacity to provide oversight as possible. And I think the point that 45 other states have already done this, no one's ever had primacy yanked back by the EPA, is probably as strong an argument as I could submit to you that it does tend to work better, and the efficiencies sought are, in fact, ultimately achieved by states that take over.
Representative Ledoux, I direct you to number three that says the progress during the five-year NEPDES program transition period. So there's ample time while the horses are leaving the barn to address this. Representative Samuels?
Thank you. And I would just make the comment, Mr. Chairman, that we know it's taking too long now. So I'm going to be supportive of the bill, I think, at this time, to try to streamline it somewhat. I mean, we know it takes too long right now to have to deal with the feds and the state. And whether it be a well being dug somewhere or a mining outfit or something simpler than that, I know that what we're doing now, we can do a better job, and I think it's a step in the right direction.
Any other discussion about amendment number four? Any objection to amendment number four?
Sure. It's yours.
Yes. Just my home. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for bringing me back.
Yeah, I will withdraw my objection to amendment number four. Any other objection to amendment number four? Seeing none, amendment four passes. Any other amendments to HB 153? Any objection to Representative Seed?
Yeah. Are we having discussion, or do we need an objection to the
have? I'll take a motion.
We don't have a motion. Well, before we have,
okay.
Since we have it before us and we don't have a motion, we can have a discussion now, I guess. I'm concerned about several things. First of all, that we are adding 13 new employees here that are even beyond the 250 to 54 that are proposed elsewhere in the governor's budget. We have consistently taken the tack of trying to, whether it's through Medicaid or through anything else, to shift funds, funding sources to the federal government, to other places instead of the general fund where we could. And this does exactly the opposite. We are undergoing a program which is just about the same right now with the coastal zone or coastal management program. It's just one heck of a mess. We have districts out here trying to do things, and the federal and state have not aligned on anything. In fact, that whole program, we are being told by the administration they may have it demise, which is going to be a loss of federal planning funds. And so my concern is this: we're trying at the same time to do this streamlining, which I just have not seen evidence that we're going to either get the savings in time, or, and definitely not in money, because it's going to cost us money. And so at this time, I don't think we should move forward on this until we get some of those questions more adequately resolved.
Appreciate your point of view, Representative Seaton. Any other summary? Representative Crawford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one comment. Generally speaking, I would much prefer to have this this regulation done here at home rather than by Washington, D.C. I have some concerns over the passage about using contractors, and if, in fact, the intention here is to privatize work that might be done by state employees, over the years, what I've seen is that there's little or no savings, and sometimes increased costs, by using outside contractors to do what state employees have done. So I'm just voicing my concerns about that. That if we're going to use private contractors, that there indeed should be real savings, quantifiable savings for doing that. And that's my comment about the bill.
Thank you, Representative Crawford. Any other closing comments? Entertain a motion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd move HB 153 as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Any objections to moving HB 153? Seeing none, it passes. We are adjourned at 2:25.